gentlemen. Good morning. Happy Easter Sunday, Easter weekend to all who celebrate. Hope you all are having a better morning after a tough evening coming off the back of our first loss of 2024. St. Louis City SC falling at the hands of Real Salt Lake 3-1 in the Mountain West. Justin, I was looking forward to making some sort of "we have risen" pun today, or I was looking forward to something, and I racked my brain, couldn't think of anything to make some fun of the occasion plus what happened last night.
Maybe next game, because I mean, it wasn't Easter when we played, so maybe next game we can make a little risen pun or something like that. But no, there's nothing overly positive to say. But Jake, before we get into the negative side of it, like you said, happy Easter to everybody that celebrates. And if you don't, either way, get outside. This weather is absolutely phenomenal. I got a quick 9 in on Friday. Went to the zoo yesterday for the first time in a while. Forest Park has been popping off. And I will say also today, it's going to be 80 degrees outside. Get outside and enjoy this lovely Sunday. Don't let this damper of a game ruin your Sunday.
Yeah, welcome to spring. And welcome to our presenting sponsor once again for 2024 in Hoffman Brothers, the official home services partner of both St. Louis City SC and of ball watching here. Give our friends a call. Get your spring tune-up, your summer prep all ready and loaded for all of your household needs. Heating, cooling, appliance repair, you name it, they do it. HoffmanBros.com, HoffmanBros.com, or call them at 314-664-3011.
I got home yesterday from the zoo, Jake, and I haven't had my AC on, obviously, because I think I had to scrape frost off of my car on Wednesday morning. And now I get home and my apartment was at 76. I had to flip my AC on. Thank God it worked. But if it didn't, I'd call the Hoffman Bros.
Yeah, you know exactly who to call. And I'm telling you, we joked about it before. I legitimately see, there's not a day that goes by that I don't see a Hoffman Brothers car either in my neighborhood or when I'm driving around. Like, they're everywhere.
I got to give a quick shout out. I'll pull up the name later. I apologize, I don't have it up earlier, but one of our listeners sent us a picture of a Hoffman Bros truck earlier this week. They are literally all over.
I love it. I mean, everyone has those needs, and they're, I mean, obviously the best in the business here in St. Louis.
Yeah. That was shout out to Dominic. He sent that to me. And that's out there. I just replied in all caps, "the boys."
Yes. The Hoffman boys. Yes. So, shout out once again to Hoffman Brothers, our presenting sponsor this year. Justin, we kind of chatted a little bit in the green room prior to this, and I know that last night was pretty brutal, all things considered, for what happened. And there's a lot of negativity at the moment. And there's going to be some negativity in the show as well. I'm just going to come out and say it, but it's going to be honest. And I think we're going to try and do our best at separating the doomsday takes and the "we are crap" takes from the "it's a bad game and you've got to learn and you've got to move on." And I think that line can get a little bit blurred sometimes. And we do have a lot of those naysayers out there right now. But I encourage you all, let's keep a positive attitude. This is the sixth game of the MLS season. We've got a hell of a lot more games to play. We're not even a fifth of the way into the season so far. So got a lot of ground to cover, though. So let's want to hop into it.
Yeah, let's hop into it. And I'll do a quick preview as well for that, on the fact that, yeah, it was a tough game. But it was, I mean, we went up early. I mean, we've talked about this. We always have a problem of giving up late goals. But there are things to build upon in this game. And let's talk about them. But first, I mean, obviously, when I say we went up early, we scored in the third minute. So that came from a ball from Mechanic into the center. Oh, I guess almost more directed on header to flick it wide. So not a bad clearance by RSL. Picked up by Indy. Takes the defender one-on-one with a bunch of confidence, double step over onto his favorite left foot, curls it into the far post, right, almost is one of those ones where it literally into the bottom net and then bounces up. It was a perfect finish by Andy off a tough angle.
Yeah, no, it was. And I have less to say about the goal. By the way, I think the goalkeeper could have done much better, at least effort-wise, on that. But I was watching, and this is a dream start to come out and just punch them in the mouth away from home on their home turf in RSL, you know, given how our first game went against them. I was really, really happy about that. I mean, it wasn't the prettiest goal of all time, but Indy hadn't scored since May of last season. So to get him back on the board as well was a good sign for me. I didn't have him, I don't think, in my starting 11. So it was, again, like, okay, look at him coming out. You got something to prove, getting on the score sheet. What a way to start a game. And comparing how he ended the game, I know he wasn't on the field, but you just take that for what it's worth. That's exactly what Cardinal, I'm sure, wants his team to come out and do, is come out, sock him in the mouth, and I'm not saying hunker down, but keep pressure on and keep applying it, and you can really do a lot. When we take a lead in games, our record's insane. I mean, we just play so much better on the front foot, and a lot of teams do, don't get me wrong. But that was a great way to start, but it just feels so overshadowed by what transpired after.
See, that's what's tough, Jake. I just pulled up our massive spreadsheet that I'll update for the game as we're working through. But before this game, when City scores first, we had 13 wins, one loss, and three draws. So literally 6% of our games, if we score first, we have lost out of the entirety of our entire season and our existence, not even just our season. So a little bit of a tough one to swallow there, because I was really excited knowing that stat going in. I'm like, wow, these boys they just came out to play.
Yeah, they did. They did. So good to get that first goal. We saw some lowlights as the first half began to kind of open up a little bit more in the 12th minute, with Markanić was tucked in, marking in the center. The ball went wide to kind of the wide channel of the field, and it was slotted across inside on the six. Julio, or Anderson Julio, yeah, I believe we talked about him in the pregame show, was on the end of it, but it was ruled offside. I thought that was the equalizer. It was definitely tight, but on the replay, you could see that Julio was in front of the ball being played as it was being cut back to him. Again, would have been really, really fun to see another cutback goal scored against us. I feel like that's one of the just classic tried and true. Markanić probably could have done a better job marking his man there. Fortunately, we were let off the hook with a little offsides call. But the first half, I really do feel like the first half was relatively even back and forth. And if you just took that for what it was, decent game.
Yeah, the one thing I'll say on the Markanić one, and it was a tough one because I feel like Yarrow got caught in a little bit in no man's land, and he did on two of the goals here. But unfortunately, Jake, when I say he gets caught in no man's land, it's because he's trying to defend two guys. I think we need a better structure and shape there, because Markanić had to go slide all the way wide on that, and it leaves then Yarrow having to defend two guys. So it's tough for him. Luckily, he was off, and Yarrow threw his arm up right away, so he knew it. I will say, almost a little bit of an L, I would say, yeah, on this next one in the 25th minute. On the corner from AZ, send it to Markanić, who was at the PK spot with, I'm not kidding, Jake, if you go back and look at it, probably 6 yards you could draw a circle around him with no other players. I wish he had a little bit more. I think he's got his footing wrong, because he probably could have took that off the chest almost and struck one home. He hit it towards the goal. Yarrow was in a tough position, tries to flick it towards the goal, but sends it wide. But then that goes to Joao. Markanić slots it in across, and then an easy save for the keeper. But it was a great one. Great ball by AZ on the corner. I just don't know what RSL was doing in the marking, and I wish Markanić could actually finish that one.
Yeah, you could have landed a 747 on the space that he had on that field. That was insane. I don't know how it opened for him. Looked like the seas had parted. But
he was about as open as the doors and the panels falling off of the 747. Shout out Boeing.
Oh, my God.
Sorry, that was tough. Sorry, Danny.
So first half overall, let's just kind of talk high level or just takeaways from there. I thought overall it was good. I mean, Chicho Arango was a shadow of himself most of that first half, and we didn't allow any shots on goal from RSL. They had a couple kind of dangerous chances. We had more touches in the 18. We were much more aggressive in the duels. Our transition D, I thought, was pretty good. It made sense to see Durkin and Blum start together, because you saw Blum kind of shift outside when a guy like Totlan got up the field, and he was kind of able to provide some cover for him. The same thing from Markanić. Both those guys, I think expectations-wise, are expected to go forward in the play and help progress. And I think guys like Durkin and Blum are perfect to kind of slot in behind them and cover for any space that they leave behind. I also think still that leaves us vulnerable at times when that transition, when the handoff doesn't really happen on time, or it happens in a delayed fashion. The bad for me, a little bit of foreshadowing heading into the second half, was our creativity just not there. I mean, just not there. We couldn't do anything through the middle. If you look at our pass map, Justin, it was so pass maps are kind of like spider webs. They put everyone on their where they plotted their most average position on the field last night. And ours, and what they do is they draw lines between players that pass the ball a lot together. And the thickness of those lines is by the chemistry and by the amount of passes that we're seeing between those two players. our passing map is one of the most shallow and colorless maps because there was such a weak connection between most players last night. The only one that I can really highlight was Celio going into AZ and then Totlan going into Durkin. There's not much connectivity with Klaus. There's not much connectivity between Indy and AZ. And then your midfield, you know, holding midfield duo of Durkin and Blum, very, very shallow, very, very little connection as well. So our ability to progress through the middle has gone from having Leuven, who could help do that, you know, not reaching his former heights yet so far this season, and obviously hurt right now, but not having him is basically ruling out any chance for us of building through the middle, which is where you're most dangerous.
Which is kind of surprising because we had 336 passes to their 427. Percentage of possession is not surprising to me, but 336 passes is pretty normal for us. So the fact that that is pretty light, I think it goes into the fact that accurate passes is only 243. Accurate meaning ones that actually connected from a city player's feet to another city player's feet. And I would say, oh, maybe it's because we had more long balls. No, we had 17 total, 32% of actual connecting passes there. While they had 37, they connected 55% of their long balls, and it just wasn't showing for us, especially in the first half.
No, and we talked about the long balls in the preview show as well and how they use them to go direct to their strikers or to their attackers. And they used them again to a good extent last night, and they were very positive. I think some of their goals even came from some of that. So let's get into it. Last thing I want to mention, Justin, is I did hear in the broadcast in the first half, this is just a note for all, especially our Sinbin followers, that the rule changes, it sounds like, have been delayed for implementation until late April. So I heard April 20. On the broadcast. I'm not sure if that was correct. I haven't seen that in writing anywhere. If anyone's found that, I would love to see it. But I want those rules so badly. I think we could have benefited last night from the VAR decision on the handball, which we'll get to, you know, being broadcast to the broadcast, but also to the fans in the stadium as well. Any deal of transparency we can get on these decisions and general clarity on why that call was made or overturned or whatever have you, we, I think, deserve as fans at this point, given the technology's gone so far. I just think we need to understand the rationale behind decisions. We don't need to agree, right? But I don't need to understand why they make that decision.
I'm going to call it out right now. So April 20th is the at Sporting Kansas City game. Something with these new rules is going to happen in that game,
yeah,
either for our favor or in their favor. But something big is going to happen. We're going to be talking about it the morning after. Something's going to happen. It's going to be applicable directly to that game. Someone's going to be upset, either us or them. I can promise.
Yeah, no, I can see it. I mean, watch that time substitution rule come in or watch someone
feign. Yeah, someone's going to have to be sitting out for 2 minutes, yep, for laying on the ground for too long, and then someone's going to score. And yep, then fans are going to be very upset the next morning.
And once we get notice for you all too, we'll bring back the content on that and remind you what those rules are. I know we glossed a little bit on them in the Sinbin episode, but once we have confirmation they're coming back, we will definitely have another Sinbin episode before then. So we'll make sure to cover those a little more extensively because they will change how you watch the game. So second half, it was awful. Night and day different from what we watched in the first half with City specifically. RSL, I think you saw the disparity in their ability to have a player that can say, I'm just going to go ahead and win this game and decides to do so. So before we get into some of the goals, I wanted to highlight a couple of things. First, Josh Yarrow, I think, played a pretty decent game last night. One of the better games consistent-wise I've seen him play. A couple flashy plays, nothing overly dramatic or poor, I would say, from him. I think he feels a lot more comfortable playing next to a Tim Parker. And by the way, don't blame him at all. Tim Parker's a veteran, a guy that probably communicates a hell of a lot with him during those games and probably makes him just feel a little bit easier once he's kind of in the thick of it. So he had a great sliding challenge in the 52nd minute on a recovery slide, which he's known for. His pace, I think, is one of his biggest assets that he's maintained over his career, and his ability to make recovery challenges. And once he's been beaten, get shoulder to shoulder, you know, eventually kind of edge ahead of the attacker and get around him and make a sliding challenge. He slid right through Berkey, and Blum was in the mix as well. And Blum's on the ground. Berkey comes piling on top of Blum. I felt bad for the man. It looked like he was shaken up a little bit.
That's why I'm just rewatching it right now. That is a big man falling, yeah, on you right now. And I remember that because, I mean, that took what I'm looking at. It probably took like 4 minutes of game time. Mm-hmm. And that would be the main reason or, yep, one of the reasons why there was 13 minutes added onto this. I was slightly surprised, Jake, but looking at it, it looks like Blum's, heel is on the field. And that's why the game didn't continue, because he's off the field. Otherwise, the ref will just, like, they'll do the treatment. I think Blum just has his foot on the field, like, you know, you guys are not starting this while I'm still laying here.
I noticed that, too, because when he initially got hurt, I saw him pull himself to almost off the field entirely. And yeah. I wondered if that was just, like, you know how some players get hurt and they claw around and they kind of make something of it. I get it. Like, sometimes that just happens. But I wondered if he was doing that for a certain reason. But he did leave, like a heel on the field, which did cause the stoppage in play. And, I mean, obviously we got 13 minutes of added time at the end. I'm not sure where all of that came from, but that was a good chunk of it. Another highlight I had, Justin, highlight mixed to low light, was it reminded me of the Austin game, our first ever Austin game, when Klaus, he took a ball, I mean, not in the Austin game, but in this game, 67 yards on a sprint. He had beaten his man, was in behind, cut in front of him, and it looks like he's going to score that Austin goal. Remember, he just hit it with the outside of his boot into the far corner to finish Austin off in the game we were at away last year. But he decides to go for power and go near post, you know, up top bins. And it went way over, but I'm saying way over. It had so much power on it that it went into like the upper bowl. But it didn't miss the crossbar by that much. It was a really, really good chance. It was our best chance of the second half. But on those types of moments, kudos to Klaus. Lung-busting run. Showed a lot of good speed there, I think, too, and ability to kind of use his body to get in front of his man and give him no chance. You've got to make more of that. I'm going to be hard on Klaus until he really clicks back into gear, because we're paying him well. He's a DP for us. We know what he's capable of. And he's just not there right now. And I'm not going to just harp on him, but you do have to look a little critically at him. Like, what are you doing for us right now? We need those moments. Those little moments can make so much for this team. Imagine if that falls last night and we're up 2-0.
Yeah, I will say, I know people are like, what are you doing? Why are you skying that? I agree with you. It didn't really miss the crossbar for that much. And looking back on it, I think he had AZ in the middle. He did have AZ, and he was trying to, but the defender was closing in on AZ. You saw AZ, he was just, like, I think he knew he wasn't getting that ball. When Klaus makes that long of a run, that man's hitting that ball 10 times out of 10. I kind of wish he wouldn't have tried to. You've seen plenty of those goals where you just try to put your laces through it and just hit it near post, almost hitting the top net on its way up. He had enough. The way the goalkeeper was out of position, I think he could have just slotted it home.
Yeah, no, I agree.
It home in the near post. He could have just tucked it right inside, and he tried to go for power and unfortunately shot it way over.
The turning point for this game for me came after that. So in the 68th minute, we made our first round of subs. And this was following the little debacle between Chicho Arango and Totlund. I don't have great videos to look at of that, and I remember watching it as well. It's tough because you can see them get mixed up physically. And Chicho definitely loses his cool a little bit and throws a closed hand into Totlund's chest/arm area. Totlund definitely makes the best of it, goes down, and I think tries to sell it a little bit. Chicho then bends over and pushes him on the ground, which is that you don't see very often. Usually it's the bend over and like yell at them while they're on the ground, but he actually did that and the push. So that for me warranted at least a yellow card. I don't even think he got that, if I'm not mistaken, and they reviewed it in VAR and determined nothing. So, you know, a tough call to, I don't think this is a red card, and I don't think that ultimately, like, that was the cheapest of fouls, but we came out on the worst end of that one, because then I think what happens is, and I want to hear your perspective on it too, Justin, but Totlund ends up coming out right after that. Hebert comes in for him. I want to talk about why that happened. And then Dinneran comes on for Indy. What was your take on the Chicho-Totlund mix-up?
I mean, I thought the same thing as you, but ultimately I'm going to side with the VAR. If they gave it a look, there wasn't enough there. I do think that Chicho obviously lost his cool, and I do think Totlund did well with it there. Like, these guys are grown men. It didn't hurt him that bad. But going down, yeah, let's draw attention to it, see if we can get anything out of it, try to throw this guy off. I mean, point, he didn't have any goals, which is very upsetting for me. Not in the fact that he didn't have any goals, but the fact that every time I look back on this, they didn't score until the 70th minute. He lost 3-1. I think it's one that we talk about time and time again with this team. But yeah, with those subs there, bringing Hebert on for Totlund and the Dinneran on for Indy, I don't know if it was overly necessary, and I would like to hear what Carnell's or be in Carnell's head on kind of why that he felt the need to bring these guys on.
Yeah, and we're gonna go into goal vision in a second here, Justin. So we're gonna bring out our analysis, our expert hats on this. But the Hebert thing is interesting to me because I've been a proponent of he needs to play center back when he's playing. I just don't think that the fullback skill set is really there. I do think he's a fine player. But playing him at right back feels really, really weird to me because we have not one, but two other alternatives that play right back. And the fact that Hebert is coming on ahead of guys like Nowinski and Watts tells me something. I don't know what it tells me exactly, but it's does he have the full trust of Carnell to go wherever he needs to be deployed? Does he have a better defensive skill set in terms of 1v1 defending than they believe Nowinski and Watts have? I don't know, but the swap for him and Tolund, they are such different players, and Hebert doesn't play right back. He played it a couple times last season out of necessity, I believe. It just felt like a weird sub to me.
I think the reason for this, at least if I could try to understand what Carnell's thought process was, we were trying to hunker down, and we're putting three center backs in there and just saying, scoring us with three center backs, even as a right back, and Berkey. And I think that's what he was doing there, which I hate that turn in a game when we're only up 1-0 in the 63rd. That is not the time where we need to hunker down. If you want to do that, do it in the 80th, 85th minute when we're really just legit parking the bus, doing like a flat five in the back. I just don't think we needed to do it that early.
Agreed. By the way, Watts did not dress last night, so I will raise my hand on that. He wasn't even available, but Nowinski was, and I still think it's weird.
And I will say for Hebert, though, I'm glad that Carnell's actually given some minutes, but I think it's tough to throw him in a situation like that. And what do you expect from a guy? Just to throw him in out of position, yep, and into the 65th minute away or 68th minute away up 1-0 when you're just telling him pretty much just park the bus. I don't think that's fair to Hebert, but I do think he deserves minutes after scoring that goal for City 2 last week.
So ball watching goal vision, we're going to take a look at the goal that RSL, the equalizer, RSL scores in the 70th minute via Chicho Arango. So this starts in the midfield, and the clip doesn't start there, but Aziel Jackson is tracking down the runner with the ball, and Hebert steps out to challenge as well. AZ was not able to put in a decent challenge on the runner, so he's been left in the dust here, and the runner plays Arango. So I'm going to pause right here, Justin. As a defender yourself, this worries me. I'm not a defender by nature, obviously a goalkeeper, but I would be pissed about this because what you're seeing on the screen, and for those that are audio, I'm going to go ahead and describe it, is Chicho Arango is basically at the top of the 18, just outside the half circle, and he has at least 5 to 6 yards between him and the nearest defender. That amount of space you cannot give to a star. They will turn that ball and pump it into the corner. And that's exactly what he does. And so I'll let that play out, and I'll go back to you, Justin. We don't close him down quickly enough. Blum gets close, not close enough. If you look at the replay, he was coming in with a little two-footer to try to take the ball off of him and is just too late for it. I think he maybe could have slid to really try to get a block on this one. But again, it takes Chicho one touch on the turn to tee up his strike into the corner. Also think, and I'm going to give it to you now, Justin, Berkey gets a hand to it, visibly upset, hits the turf after, think he could have done better on that one personally. And maybe I'm being a little bit tough, but that's my opinion.
I'll start from the beginning and then go into the back. If yep. you play it a little bit here and hold that. So right here, I'm like, why did Parker not step? Parker has a man. He's marking him. Parker did well to stay there. He does not need to step there. That's not his guy to go to Arango. Unfortunately, I think it's Yarrow. But if you look at this, it's almost if Yarrow steps more, then he's leaving Hebert on a 1v1 to let him kind of take it. And I think you need to respect Hebert there and let him take this guy 1v1 and own that. Because when Yarrow right there, when the ball gets played into Rongo, Yarrow should not be dropping back further. He yep. needs to step there. That is not Durkin or Blum's job to close that down. And if anybody that can't see this, it's frustrating because we had a flat back four and two guys in front. That's supposed to be a block that no one gets in between. And Arango's just sitting there pretty much doing a whole campsite, doing whatever he wants with the amount of room that he has. I will say, very impressive turn and finish. If anybody didn't see it, he doesn't even look at the goal once the entire time. So he knows where he's at on the field, and he's able to slot it home. I think Berkey pounds the ground because he's upset with the defenders and the fact that he was even open in that sense. Berkey does get a fingertip to it. I just don't think you expect him to save it from there, because that's a great finish right there. He gets a fingertip. Like, yes, if he makes that save, I wouldn't be surprised because Roman Berkey, but I don't blame him at all for that. Unfortunately, I think Mr. Yarrow needed the step there. I wouldn't say Blum should have slid, because if he slides and Arango takes a touch, it's going to be a foul on a yellow card immediately with a free kick 20 yards out. So I do think that Blum did somewhat well to close there and try to get a step in, but not slide to make a block. But I do think Yarrow should have been the one to step there and take out Arango and take the ball from him.
Yeah, so frustrating way to concede, but that is how we concede our first goal. By the way, someone said, stop action analytics. We did this literally for the first time last week. We're not doing anything that they're not doing in the room this week. These are moments, literally all that Carnell talks about, I swear, in these press conferences, is about little moments or little things. These are little moments, little things that make a huge freaking difference. If you are not tight enough on your man and he's a star player like that, he will make you pay for it. That is something that I'm sure he will drill into these guys this week in the video room.
Jake, what the hell are action
analytics? I don't know. First time I'd heard of it. But right, I assume that person is not,
I don't know if they watch much soccer, because I've never heard of that term in my life, and I don't really know what action analytics are. Let's just break down the game, and that's what we're doing, these recaps. And let's, if anything, I love that we're bringing up the video so we can talk through these things and how these are occurring. And I think if you want to, Jake, we can go into the next one if you're ready for it. Sorry if I threw you under the bus there, but into their handball goal.
Yeah. So handball happens. The only thing that happened between there was a decent shot that Celio had on net. It was one of our only opportunities again that we had.
Our second shot on goal. So Klaus spun off. He peeled off. Klaus would make a little bit of a run. Ball gets kind of left in the midfield. Klaus goes back to get it. Sends a one-time lefter all the way over to Celio on the other side, who's open, and I love it when he gets space. Takes the defender one-on-one, cuts in on his right, very similar to the Indy play, where Indy cut in on his left. Celio takes the defender one-on-one, quick step in, cuts in on his right. I wish he had a little bit of a better shot, but it was our second shot on goal after Indy's goal, and those were our only two shots on goal in the entire game.
They were. The only thing that happened before this second goal and PK and VAR review was Alm comes in for AZ and Ostrock in for Klaus, or maybe vice versa. Either way, Alm and Ostrock come in, AZ, Klaus go out. So I'm going to pull up the handball. I'm not going to review the PK, obviously, because I don't care. It's a PK. People that are, and we'll talk about that at the end. I'm going to save that, actually. But the handball on Chris Durkin was actually reviewed dually, because Tim Parker also had the ball hit off his hand right here on the slide. This is not called, and I'm going to pull up the rules on my other screen so I can be very clear when talking about the handball. So Tim Parker goes to slide. Behind him, usually you have like your plant, you know, kind of arm to catch you as you're sliding. It's a natural position for the hand to be in. I've seen that called before because it's remarkably inconsistent, but his hand is going behind him to catch him as he's sliding. It's a natural position to me. That's why that's not called. That ball gets across, though, underneath him, bounces up off the turf. Chris Durkin probably senses danger around him and says, this ball is too high for me to do anything with besides knee it and just keep it going. So what he does, and this is a perfect way to stop it here, Chris Durkin is in full stride, jumps into the air, goes with his right knee to knee it out of bounds, knee it out of danger, what have you, something to just keep the ball out of its current path because Chicho Arango's in the area. And in doing so, he knees it up into the air off of his outstretched left arm elbow, and they call a PK live on the field. This isn't on VAR. They call it live on the field as a PK. I don't know if they were calling it for Parker or for Durkin first, probably for Durkin. So Justin, before we have our take on this, I want to review very quickly the handball rule before we get into what we think about it. So three things come to mind now when you think about handball offenses. Couldn't connect with George before this. Busy, busy man. I'm sure we will and talk about this one specifically. But the first thing, this is, by the way, this was revised a couple years ago now. The first thing is handballs. If a handball is a handball offense, if a player, one, deliberately touches the ball with their hand or arm, for example, moving the hand or arm towards the ball. He's moving his hand or arm, in this case, away from the ball. So we can go ahead and cross that one off. He's moving his arm up. It's a natural position, but this is when we get to natural position. To me, I felt it was natural. The second bullet is, it's a handball offense if a player touches the ball with their hand or arm when it has made their body unnaturally bigger. a player is considered to have made their body unnaturally bigger when the position of their hand or arm is not a consequence of or justifiable by the player's body movement for that specific situation. By having their hand or arm in that position, the player takes a risk of their hand or arm being hit by the ball and being penalized. And the final one, this is not applicable here, is when the hand or arm contributes to a score in the opponent's goal, that's going to be immediately reviewed and it's going to be looked at a lot more critically. So I think the number two part is the interesting part here. So the argument, Justin, I want to hear your take first, is does this ring handball to you? And if so, I think the case would be it's making him bigger.
Yeah, I would say, Jake, I mean, I appreciate you reading all of them. It's a handball. I don't know how else you take it. I mean, if you hit play from here, the ball is his arm stops the ball from going into it's in the position of what. So what he was trying to do with his knee was take the ball out of the route that it's currently going to Chicho Arango. And instead his hand does that. And it's just a handball. I don't know what else we need to. I don't know what else we could really say here. The Parker one, I agree with you. Definitely not a handball. It's tough. It's a good slide. If you're sliding, there's no way he's like putting his hand there to try to use it as like a third leg to stop the ball. It's just him going down to try to slide and take the ball. And unfortunately, if it doesn't hit Parker's hand, then I don't think it's going to be a handball on Durkin either, because that's what shoves it into the ground to spray it back up. But unfortunately, when you look at this, it's not like it just nicks off of his arm and it continues on its own route. It redirects the ball completely, and I think that's why they called it a handball.
I think this is a tougher call had it not been called live on the field, because I don't think it's clear as day that it makes him bigger. Because to me, the bigger argument is always when I'm going to block a shot and I have an arm outstretched in an unnatural position, I made myself wider. For him, his hand is like up in the air. It's not like he's blocking a shot or anything, and it's a secondary touch as well, too, which are always kind of like, honestly, a little bit of a cluster on how they call secondary touches, because that's not, he didn't hit off his hand first, hit his knee, then his hand in quick succession. So for him, his arm is outstretched and high. I think it's a natural position, but I think the argument the referee would make in this case that it is making him bigger and does kind of direct the ball in a different way that it would have been had he been in a more natural position. So I get the call entirely. If this was us, by the way, all you City fans that say this is an easy call and this is an awful call, I disagree, guys. I mean, if this was us on the other side, we would all be screaming handball. It's definitely a handball. But I get both sides here for sure. I still kind of lean on the side that it is a handball, but it's a really tough call. And at this game state that we were in, oh my God, it just took everything out of us. We looked a shadow after this.
Yeah, unfortunately, it was a complete disruption of the game. And obviously, I mean, it gave them their 2-1 lead, which is tough that late in the game. I mean, that's the 84th minute. At that point, it seems like the death. But then we're getting 13 minutes of stoppage, which I knew we knew we were going to get probably like 7 or so is what I was expecting. But 13 is just an absurd number from there. And before we get into their last goal, I will say there was a highlight there in the 88th minute. Berkey trying to save us completely and has another great kick save. And that was in the 88th minute. And then the last sub that we have was Thor came on for Durkin. And that's solely because that's where, again, Carnell's like, all right, we're down. Now we need to take off one of our holding mids and we're going to put on an attacker like Thor. And hopefully we have a Thor banger, which we have yet to see. And we did not see.
Yeah, so let's get into the third goal. They score in the 90+1, first minute of 13 minutes of stoppage time. Diego Luna enters the field, did not start the game. We were pretty fortunate to not have some of these guys on the field to start too. But he gets onto the field and definitely has an immediate type of impact. And these are the moments that you talk about game breakers have. And if now I'm sharing screen for anyone's watching visual. By the way, for anyone that's not watching visual, we're trying to do our best audio-wise, but definitely encourage you to check it out on YouTube. And while you're there, hit subscribe and like the video. So we're on to the third goal now, 90+1. It's a long ball over the top. Pretty tame. I mean, just this should be a situation that we should be able to handle. But Chicho Arango disrupts Markkanen enough and gets a great first touch off of him. Markkanen's got to do better there. At least just don't let him turn. Chicho gets that first touch, spins Markkanen. Markkanen does a good enough job to get a recovery kind of touch on the ball and put it off of Arango's foot, but it falls straight to Luna, who's closing in on Hebert. It's going to be a 50-50 challenge. Hebert is late to it. Diego Luna is obviously a beast in these types of one-on-one situations. Takes it away from Hebert. Hebert's out of the play. Markkanen sucked out of the play, and now it's Yarrow versus three. So what Luna does, continue to pick up his dribble, finds Chicho Arango, who's now peeled off of Yaro's shoulder, right on top of the middle of the 18, slots him in, and Arango has an easy near post finish on Berkey. It's a really frustrating goal to give up.
That's what I was talking about, where I feel like Yaro gets caught in no man's land, but again, to not his own fault. It was literally Luna going at him, and he could have slotted a guy to the right or left, and Yaro's just trying to do his best there, and he gets spun a little bit with his legs. Right here, Jake, is what I wanted to talk about. Before all of this, long ball, Markkanen gets a little bump beforehand, fine, not a big player as far as size-wise, and that's okay. Incredible touch by Chicho Arango off of his thigh to take it to the inside and keep it close to him. Unfortunately, right here is where I think he goes down to try to win the ball. I think it's a great tackle. I can see it. You need to slide. I understand it's not his dominant foot. He needs to slide with his left foot to try to wrap this around and clean it. You cannot try to just use your right foot and do a little hook as you're kind of off-stepping already and you're kind of wrong-footed. You need to slide with your left and either win the ball, win the man, or win both. I'm fine with giving up a free kick here. We still have 12 minutes of stoppage after this. Yes, Luna will roll around on the ground and all that, but this is 30 yards out. They're not going to score a banger on Berkey here, but the fact that he doesn't win this then leads to a 3-on-1 and an easy finish for them.
Totally agree. It's Markkanen has got to do better on his man on the initial ball, at least get a touch on it or bring him down, whatever. But Hebert, if you're going to step up there and not fall off, he also could have just stepped off as well. Like here, doesn't have to go and challenge this ball. I know he thinks he can get to it, and then he sees Luna closing in, and he probably thinks he has to challenge for it here. But I agree with you, Justin. If you're not going to get the ball, raise that leg up and take Luna down. It's I'm not saying it's easy, but you've got to be aware of what's going on here. And Yaro's the last guy back. We're out of position. Look at Tim Parker. I mean, he's ahead of Blum, like closer to Ostrock at this point. So we've got to do better in two instances here. I don't think it's solely Yaro, it's solely Markkanen, or it's solely Hebert, but a string of transition all happens because of a superstar in Chicho Arango makes a great touch off Markkanen, and they create something out of pretty much nothing. It was a really tame long ball that normally you see us step up and win, or at least challenge better.
Yeah, I'm watching this a couple different times now. I do think that, honestly, Hebert shouldn't have went down there. He should have just stepped up and won body on Luna. And I think you win the body and you just push him off the ball. And if you get a foul call, you get a foul call, but you're not letting him go by. I think if you do go down, like I said, you need to be winning Luna as well as the ball, because you can't let them get through, because it just leads to a 3-on-1. And there's nothing, again, that Roman Breaking can do here. It was a good finish by Chicho Arango. He ended up opening up his hips, but then still snuck it near post on Berkey, and that's a tough one.
So zooming out, we're almost at 40 minutes here on the show, Justin. It was, again, a tale of a first and second half for us. We generated 0.47 XG, which is pretty abysmal, and Indy's goal wasn't even most of that. That was 0.02. I think it was Klaus's chance that had the most XG on the night that should have been better for them. They had 1.5. They were definitely a better team. They created four big chances to our one. To me, it just shows the disparity when things aren't going your way, because it wasn't like they were running us ragged last night. When they got their chances, they made the most of them. They converted them. They missed even a couple as well, but Berkey only had one save last night. It's not like he was being peppered or anything. We are in this game, and I think their ability to take and convert those small moments and be able to make the most of them highlights the things that we have been so poor at so far this season, is to be better in those moments, or to make the most of those moments when you do have those little small half chances to make the most of. And they have a guy like Arango that makes money off of that.
Yeah, it's tough to see a 0.47 expected goals. I will say, when we look at it, Klaus's was 0.33 of that is what they're saying. And I agree with that. Jake, I keep going back to like a percentage. I think Klaus can score that 33% of the time. Unfortunately, he skied it over there, and they're putting, I think, if I'm looking at this right, Jake, when I'm looking at FotBob and kind of clicking around, the XG of Indies was 0.02, which makes a little sense, but I think he scores that more than 2% of the time. I know it's not a percentage thing, but that's how I'm going to take it. I mean, it was a great finish, but it is unfortunate. We're looking at this. We are beaten on every category besides shots off target. We beat them on that. So like, impressive for us. Like, it's just, it was a tough game. The one thing I want to say in total, looking back on this, is if we are given the gift of being able to go up in the third minute, we need to get a point. I know everybody's frustrated with ties, but you cannot leave there just with 0 points going up that early in the game. We already talked about it before this game. We were 13-1-4. We had one loss when we scored first, either away or home, don't care, anywhere. We cannot be giving up all 3 points or a point at this point and coming home with nothing.
Player ratings, Justin, I don't think it's worth the time here. It's just everyone was just sort of not great last night. I think if I only could give my flowers, my heart and soul of the team last night to one person, I don't even really have someone I'm like, I've got to give it to him. But I'm going to give mine to Indy. You know, getting his first goal in pretty much the better part of a year is good to get him off the board, good for his confidence. Again, I do feel like he's a softer, not even a soft, but a more lead by example guy on the field. And I think in the locker room, he's a glue guy. He really connects with a lot of the players. He feels like he's a chemistry guy. So he's important to the team, clearly. And to see him contributing there, I think is good. And he owned up to it in the press conference as well, just said it was not good enough at all last night. So I appreciated hearing that from him. How about you, Justin?
I'm not going to give it to any players. My heart and soul juice player of the game is St. Louis. Thank you for staying up for that game. That's a tough one in 8:30 p.m. with 13 minutes of stoppage. Tough to watch, especially as we're holding on and they don't score until what, like the 72nd. So thank you to St. Louis for that. Also a tough day for St. Louis in general. Battlehawks lose on a 64-yard field goal. That guy's going pro. Blues, 4-0 loss. Birds, first up. Nice little equinox there. Next weekend, Jake, we got the Battlehawks at home at 7 p.m., City at 7:30. The Birds are at home at 1:15. The Blues are also playing, but they're on the road. It's going to be insane. But I'm giving my heart and soul juice to St. Louis for staying away for that game. Be ready to bounce back. Have a great Sunday. Get outside. Go to Schnucks, Dierberg, Straub's online at souljuice.com using code BALLWATCH and get 20% off. Go get some. Enjoy it on this beautiful Sunday.
So, Justin, last couple things before we depart here. I want to actually hit predictions, Grahammer, first. I predicted a 1-1 draw. You predicted a 2-1 W. We both were wrong on that, but I was in the green. I hit both teams to score in the under 4.5. It got a little nervy towards the end there, but was able to squeak that one out. You had the double chance. Obviously, that was not good last night for us, but any comments, Justin?
One thing I'm going to say on betting that I think I'm now understanding a little bit more with the MLS, like I took these early because I feel like every time I thought there was a trend of as the game goes on, City gets their odds get worse, or I guess like worse for betting perspective. No, it continued to rise. The double chance got to like a minus or a plus 130. When we talked about this on Wednesday, it was plus 100. So I took it way too early. I will say also, I think it's solely when we're on the road. If we're at home, get those bets in early. If we're on the road, wait as long as you can, because I think the home fans are going to continue to pile on and swing those lines. And that's what happens when we're at home. You're going to get us to score 2 goals on Saturday against FC Dallas. And it's going to be like a minus 170 by the time game time starts. Try to get it like a minus 120 at a time.
Great tip. And I want to give a quick shout out to our listener, Andrew Fowler, who I saw at Club Fitness getting the lift in. He said he was riding with us this weekend on the bets and he bet the Klaus brace. So I rode with him for Klaus to get 2 goals. Didn't look like it was going to happen at all last time, but you know what? We believe in Klaus. It's going to happen one of these days.
I took Klaus anytime as well. It's going to happen. The man's going to start getting on a roll and try to get ahead of it, because if honestly though, Jake, I don't think I'm going to take him to score unless it's at least plus 185, close to 200, because the man has 1 goal this year. It's a PK. So I don't think I'm going to take any worse odds than that.
So on this Easter Sunday, Justin, I think it's important that we shoot down some doomsday takes that I've been seeing scattered across the socials. I just picked out a couple here. Guys, it's just not time to freak out like this right now. I saw a take from someone, quote, time to sell the team and start over. Hashtag unreal. How about this? A lot of people crapping on Berkey. Berkey's career PK save rate is less than 5%. He's 0 for 25 since 2017. No one's coming out and saying it, but I think they're alluding to, I guess he's not good enough, or that we should sell him. I mean, what are you guys smoking? Like, who cares if he can't save a PK? He's going to face 3 of those this season. That's it. Like, maybe some in the playoffs, God forbid. But what he does for this team is so much more than try to stop PKs. It just baffles me.
It is a pretty insane stat, but I'm not worried about it. I would say the amount of goals that he keeps out for us throughout the run of play, I don't even care if he just wants to walk away from the goal on a PK. They're expected to score these PKs. Yeah. If you can keep one out, it's a great save by a goalkeeper. But, I mean, what is he supposed to do there? I'm completely fine with that. Do the Ned Stark one.
Oh, my God. I don't have that one up right now, but someone basically said if Chicho Arango was my teammate – or no, if I was playing against Chicho Arango and he did the punch thing to my teammate, then I would – do something to him similar like Ned Stark in season one Game of Thrones finale, where he, I think, he gets his head chopped off, right?
Yeah, he gets his head. Yeah.
God. And then the final one I wanted to call out here is Aziel Jackson is not helping the team, needs to be replaced. So does Klaus and Markkanen. They're killing us too. We need to spend money and get better players. Wow. AZ is 22, probably one of our highest valued players, or could be one of our highest valued players. I don't think we need to replace him right now. I think he needs to be replaced in the starting 11. I think that's a fair take. I don't think Klaus needs to be replaced right now either. I mean, it's just the fact that we're six games in. You got to give time here. I agree. It's not pretty, and you need more from these players. But to write people off six games into the season, I hope these guys are keeping receipts. But, Justin, to course correct us, there's definitely some real tangible worries that I have to start the season. One, and I'll just get it kicked off here, is we went from, a lot of draws, but we're undefeated, to now we are winless in four. And then the only win came against New York City FC, who have not been great. So we're really struggling to get 3 points on the board for any match.
Yeah, I will say, just quickly touching on those three guys, I do think AZ is better as a spark plug. We talked about that. Klaus will get rolling. I'll hold that receipt. And then the Markkanen thing, Jake, I do think it might be time to start talking about Duer starting at left back. I think it's one of those that it's not. I don't think Markkanen's played that poorly. I think he's got a couple of times where he's gotten his hips turned wrong and he can't catch up to these runners playing in. But I do think that it could be a little trial here for Duer in the next game, so we can keep an eye on that. Yep. I will say, just in general, as I agree, Jake, now that we are four games in a row, not having a win is tough. We still have 7 points right now. So honestly, that's still, there's three of us tied. Portland, LAFC, and us, we're tied for eighth right now in the West. And it's so early on, it's even hard to talk about this. Like, yes, I understand there's only four teams below us, with Austin with six, Dallas with three, San Jose with three, and Seattle with two. But as I say that, Jake, we're playing Dallas and Austin at home. So two of those teams that are below us already, it's time to come back home to City Park and get some dubs.
I'm going to save the honest reflections for the previewing so I can spend more time on this. But I agree, it's a great way to end it, Justin, because now we're coming home and we have two games against teams that are, I believe, are below us in the standings as it stands today.
That's what you said, Jake.
Yeah, sorry, I missed that part. I was looking at a different note. But yes, they're both winnable games. They're both at home. Austin, we know we can beat. That was brutal that we drew them earlier this season. And Dallas has been a shadow of themselves this year. So I really feel like this just makes it important to get home, collect 6 points. I think you get 6 points in these next two games. I would take four too, but 6 points, you're right back on track. And I think people are humming the songs they were last year again, because we're getting back in the win column and we need those points pretty dearly at this point.
Yeah, Jake, I think it's a lot of recency bias, I would say, on these guys. I mean, where were these people when we were 5-0 last year, saying like, oh my God, we're the best team on earth, all of that. Yeah. Same thing applies here. Just wait for us to bounce back. I'm not worried about it. But I will say, Jake, we need to have this Sam and Dinner in conversation, because I think that's a lot of recency bias right now as well, with you guys saying that, oh, he's worth millions and millions of dollars. Where is Mr. Sam and Dinner in? Two goals in six games now for us. I'm not seeing it. Seven.
Didn't even get a start last night either.
Didn't get a start.
When he did get
on, he didn't even get on.
Yeah. No, I'm with you. So we'll talk. We'll talk Sam, and we'll talk honest reflections through six games of the season, fair reflections that aren't doomsday scenarios for us right now. So we'll talk about those in the preview. We'll commit to that right now. And we'll see y'all on Wednesday for a preview of Dallas coming to town next weekend. It should be fun. Hoping for a good three-pointer for us.
Get outside, enjoy this weather while you're doing that. Go for a walk around downtown, stop in the pitch. The doors are going to be open, like literally wide open, to let that air flow in on this 80-degree day. Go to the pitch. I mean, obviously it's Sunday. Enjoy time with your family. But during the week, go there for lunch, go there for dinner, watch some March Madness there, Blues, Battle Hawks. Saturday is going to be absolutely insane. Go to the pitch.
April 6th, here we come. Going to be a good day for St. Louis. Hopefully a better day for City. So looking forward to it. We'll talk to you all again on Wednesday for a preview of the Dallas match. Until then, everyone, enjoy your Easter, enjoy your weekend, and enjoy your week leading up to Wednesday. We'll see you all then. All for City.
All for City.
Three, two, one. Yeah.